Imagine you are at the checkout at the supermarket, and you take your cash card, you got something like 35 euros to pay, and you place it just on the top of the terminal. It makes a beep, and you have paid. Well, how does near-field communication work? In particular, what happens at the protocol levels? Well, the answers are given now by Simon Oemes, who is a co-founder of Payworks. It's a company specialized in point-of-sale payment gateway technologies. Simon has studied informatics in Munich, in San Francisco, and in Los Angeles. So let's welcome now Simon with his talk on decoding contactless card payments. Simon, yours.
Well, thanks a lot. And yeah, what a crowd. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining tonight. And tonight I want to talk about contactless card payments and how we go from like inserting a card to tapping a card to, in the end, just tapping your smartphone. And full disclosure, I'm not talking about like exposing new security risks in that format, and also I'm not going on the lowest level of the EMV protocol, which is basically below the running this. But I rather want to focus on the status quo. How is basically a contactless card transaction working? How do we do Apple Pay? How do we do Android Pay? What is involved there? And why is it not possible to actually take a card and clone it to your smartphone, something that the chip card should actually prevent you from doing. And just to give you some context where this is coming from, I work at Payworks, where we run a payment gateway and develop tools for making transactions easier for developers to integrate. And over there, I'm mainly responsible for integrating new terminals, connecting new banks. And I want to take the motto of the Congress, TuWAT, and just TuWAT, and give you some insights in what I learned while working on that. Yeah, let's get started with this. Probably everybody here in the room has heard about contactless payments and has used it, maybe not. I mean, in Germany, adoption rate for contactless transactions are relatively slow. First of all, you get a new card from your bank or your credit card company. And even if you have that, you still need a terminal, which is actually able to handle contactless transactions. And if you then finally do a contactless transaction, the cashier is looking at you very curiously and saying, well, this is not happening. That's not how it worked basically before. And in the end, you get your goods, but there are always some surprises waiting for you. And what we are looking at tonight is basically, first of all, what makes a contactless transaction? The blueprint, what stages do we go through? Then we need to discuss ways of actually converting your smartphone into emulating or simulating a contactless card. In addition to that, I want to talk a little bit about making payments a little bit more secure at the point of sale or on the e-commerce side in general, where we talk about tokenization. And then we have all the information that we need to actually look into Apple Pay and Android Pay. And in the end, I just want to give a quick look out on how I could envision the next steps when it comes to contactless transactions and transactions at the point of sale in general. So, looking at contactless transactions, this is a relatively new technology, and you might think, well, somebody came up with something new that was basically state of the art. But if you look at the underlying protocols, you would see that this just brings EMV transactions, that's the protocol or the workflows that are used for contactless for the traditional chip cards, to the contactless level. So you basically take what you have and put basically NFC on it, and that's it. And because I'm not going into too much detail when it comes to the contactless where he was talking about EMV transactions and is actually going on the lowest level, looking at the specs, looking at the protocols, and what actually makes a transaction work in the end, what data elements are involved in there. But for us, it's important to first have a look what is actually or who is actually involved in an overall transaction. And this is not only true for a contactless transaction, also a contact transaction using a chip card is basically using the same entities. So on the one hand, you have yourself as a shopper, as somebody who wants to buy something, and you have a credit card. And this credit card is given to you by a bank, by your bank, and then the terminal starts like a chain of transactions or of hops, and the terminal sends the data, including the account data and this cryptogram, to the actual acquiring bank. And from there, the acquiring bank sends it to the global payment network. And based on the first digits of your credit card, the payment networks know what the actual issuer is, because every issuer has assigned a specific number range. And then in the end, the issuer receives this kind of data, sees the cryptogram, and basically is able to verify that this is a genuine transaction made with the card that it says it is, and checks if the funds are available, and then hopefully approves the transactions in the end. And then this okay basically goes from the lowest end back to the terminal. It shows approved, and in the end you get your goods and can leave. So that's basically looking at a whole transaction as an entity. Talk a little bit about what kind of data is exchanged as that. I think it's interesting to see what actually is basically saved on the credit card. Tim's talk about EMV has some more detailed information on that. But what you basically get is account information. You get your primary account number, your credit card number, basically. You get your track 2 equivalent data. That's basically a data element which mimics the data that would normally be on Magstripe if you still had one. There are still networks which only route those kind of information and not the whole transaction data. And for backward compatibility and legacy reasons, this is still present. Aside from that, you also, for example, have the expiry date. Then you have verification information. So what kind of verification should be supported? The card can make some recommendations. The terminal has some information, what it actually supports. Does it have a pin pad? Doesn't have a pin pad? Should we accept signatures? Information like that. Then we have the authentication data. There you basically get the reference to your CA public key from the card schemes. You get the public key of the card itself. And the resulting signed data to check offline on the terminal if the transaction is valid. And then you have the authorization data, which is, I mean, aside from the card information, the amount, and they are normally static until you basically say, well, I want to add another card. Even if the same card, you will probably get a different token. But in general, it's basically static. Yes, there would be a benefit in changing this regularly, just removing fingerprinting options there. As I think the major benefit of actually having this kind of option is that you can hide your actual credit card number. And this, I think, was the primary focus on there.
Okay, microphone number 4, please.
You were talking about payment networks like MasterCard and Visa. It's the same technology used for contactless payment cards known as Girocard in Germany. But it's completely different.
It's similar. I mean, the Girocard has its own kernel, which should be running on the terminal. And you don't have this global payment network, if you will, but you have like a local German network, which is connected to different service providers. But the handling overall is more or less similar, yeah.
And microphone number 5, please.
Hi. I heard, or I often hear, that risk management is one of the most important things for credit card institutes, or a pretty important thing. Do you have any experience in this, or do you know if there really is so much money stolen from the credit card institutes or during the transaction?
Well, I think you have to differentiate. I mean, there are credit card issuers or companies who have been doing this in a long time, and especially in Europe, they are very keen on checking the data as part of the risk management. When EMV was introduced in the US, there were instances where the bank introduced EMV, but they didn't check any data, so you could just send in transactions that would be approved. This happens from time to time, but if the correct checking is implemented, then this is very hard.
Okay, let's get back to microphone number three.
Hello. I think you forgot to mention another alternative. You can pay with the phone or nearly pay with the phone because some banks are also issuing near the card the near-field communication sticker that you can just put on the back of the phone.
I guess so.
Yeah,
thanks. A mysterious voice out of the back. The words we use to talk about a topic strongly influence how we perceive it. This might seem like an obvious statement, but when we look at the news and what's happening in the last years, this is something which is so true. We just think about, seriously, a mate bottle? So this is something we see come true. Words have a lot of meaning. When you think of Trump, what's happening there, it has a lot to do with speech. Lisa is a linguistics student, and she will talk to us exactly about this topic. She will tell us how words can be used to shape our perception of a certain topic. In this case, the Snoopers Charter of the UK, a charter which forces ISP to save your browser history. This is scary. So please welcome Lisa with a big round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so let's begin. Hey, I'm Lisa.
and I'm a linguist. Welcome to my talk. This is not a proposal about mass surveillance, analyzing the terminology of the UK's Snoopers Charter. So many people interested in linguistics so late in the day, this is amazing. Thank you very much for attending my talk. I hope all of you had a wonderful Congress so far. Are there any linguists in the audience? One. And maybe some more, yeah, in the back. Nice, very nice. Okay, let's begin. In this talk, I'm going to take a closer look at the Snoopers Charter and its terminology from a corpus linguistic point of view. So, what is the Investigatory Powers Act, also known as Snoopers Charter? It is a new legislation which extends the surveillance powers of the state, and it would allow the security agencies to keep so-called internet connection records for up to 1 year and to hack mobile phones and laptops on a large scale without any suspicion. It was previously known as the Investigatory Powers Bill. And to make it a bit clearer, a bill is a law which has only been proposed but has not passed.